joining me today is Pastor Jonathan Anderson, the Senior Associate Pastor at Countryside. Jonathan, thanks for being on the podcast today.
It's a joy to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, well, we've got our work cut out for us over the next three or four episodes as we are seeking to dive into a biblical philosophy of missions and to do that from a few different angles, one from a biblical perspective, but then also to lay out what that looks like practically here at Countryside. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of those components, let me just give our listeners just a brief overview of where we're going in the next three or four episodes. Yep. We're going to work through a biblical foundation of missions. We're going to look at some biblical text and sort of get our marching orders for why we do missions. Next, we're going to look at a practical expression of missions, a specific plan that we're going to argue that every church needs to have. Thirdly, we're going to look at just personal involvement, why every Bible-believing Christian must be involved in missions in one way or another. And then lastly, we're going to look at the fuel, the compelling fuel for what it means to be part of missions, how to get motivated, practically speaking, to be involved. So I'm going to swing it to you to sort of kick off this series by simply just telling us why missions? Why have a missions philosophy for your church and why that's crucial to the mission of the church?
You bet. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think most Christians and most churches, when they hear the word missions, they would affirm the need for that and the fact that the church should be passionate about that. I think the reason for this conversation and the reason for any church to think carefully about missions is because the scriptures speak to it very clearly. And I think it's one of those areas in the church where it's easy for maybe the excitement for it to cause us to not think as carefully about it. I mean, I know a lot of churches are very well-intentioned when it comes to missions, and they're excited for the possibility. So if somebody in their church wants to go be a missionary, they're excited, they've always wanted that, but they don't think a lot about what they're gonna do or where they're gonna go or how they're gonna do it or if they're qualified or gifted. So I think it's just critical that we start with what does the Bible say, and I think the Bible is clear and it has a lot of insight, as we know, on every issue of life, but a lot of real practical wisdom for us when it comes to this topic as well.
Yeah, so let's begin with that biblical foundation. There's a classic text that everybody goes to when we talk about missions, and it is right that we go there, Matthew 28 and the Great Commission, right? Yep. So if you can sort of map out what that text means and how it gives sort of our foundation and marching orders to move forward with missions.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's a ton in Matthew 28 that we could unpack when we look at what Christ commanded to his disciples. And I think that's kind of where we have to start, is that this was Christ commanding his disciples. You know, missions is, and what Christ commands is not optional for us. It's really demanded by him. The reason we care about missions is because Christ did command this. You know, this is his final marching orders to the disciples, also, you know, the 12, but also all those who were his disciples gathered in Galilee. And so this is what he wants us to be about. And he's clear in what that is. I mean, just to read the familiar text that, you know, we all know, you know, or to quote it, I mean, he says, you know, to go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. And so he does not only command this, but he is intentional to define what that looks like for us. And so He defines, you know, both the scope of what it is that we're to do. He says to go and make disciples of all the nations. And that idea of making disciples is one that's, you know, throughout the scriptures, to call individuals to be followers of the Lord Jesus Christ. But that's where a lot of missions emphasis stops, is mm-hmm. it's just, hey, we're to make disciples. And if you do that in your neighborhood, that's missions. And if you just are sharing the gospel with people, calling them, that's missions. And that's not how Christ defines it here in the context. He says, you know, to go and make disciples of all the nations, pantata ethne, all the peoples. Mm-hmm. So he's not talking about, you know, every geopolitical nation, but all the peoples of the world. And we see, you know, the fruit of that in Revelation, where you have people from every tongue and tribe and nation praising the Lamb. And ultimately, that goal among all the peoples of the nations is to see healthy churches established. He says to baptize them in the context of the local church, to teach them all that I've commanded you. And obviously, as we think carefully about those things, there's a lot that is fleshed out in what we should do in missions.
Yeah, that's helpful. So I think what you've said there, just to sort of piggyback and echo what you're talking about, there is an evangelistic sense in the Matthew 28 world,
absolutely.
Right? Sharing the gospel with the neighbor, your neighbors in the community and whatnot. But when we talk about Matthew 28 in its fullest sense, it's directly connected to the local church and the efforts that the local church will take in getting the gospel to the peoples, to the nations, and then planting local churches in those particular areas. So to summarize, it's not just evangelistic. There's right. a long-term goal and purpose with this Matthew 28 context that we're arguing for.
Yep. And so often, you know, we set a goal that's just it's far short of the finish line that Christ is commanding in this context. Again, not an unimportant part of that goal, or an unimportant part of the Christian life, just not the full scope of what Christ commands in that way.
Yeah, so you've talked about these things before, Jonathan, just between nations and peoples. So could you sort of define maybe those categories and lay out what we mean when we see the Great Commission? It talks about getting the gospel to nations. What does that mean as it relates to people groups mm-hmm. and those realities?
Yeah, I mean, when you think of nations versus peoples, you know, there's a couple hundred nations in our world today. Geopolitical borders, you know, mm-hmm. centralized, some form of government that defines that nation. But within many nations, there are a lot more people groups. And I think probably the clearest way to define those is just people who speak a unique language. You know, there's certainly other factors and people have defined them in a variety of ways. But when you think of you know, the language groups that characterize our world, I think there's some 7,000 plus languages in our world. And so when Christ says to make disciples of the nations, he's meaning all the different people groups, all the different language groups. You know, we shouldn't be content to say, ah, there's a lot of churches and a lot of Christians in the United States where there are English speakers, and there's a lot of churches, you know, maybe in the Spanish speaking part of the world. And it's like, well, no, there's peoples that we need to be committed to seeing the gospel go. And that's really, really what you see in Paul's heart, you know, in Romans 15, where he's describing how he is eager to go to preach the gospel where Christ has not been named. And so there's a clear commitment on his part, as there should be on ours, to see the gospel go to those peoples with whom right now there is no gospel witness. You know, sometimes the example I use with kids or youth, it's helpful for us to, you know, the difference between syrup on a pancake and syrup on a waffle. You know, pancake, you just dump the syrup on and you know it's kind of going to spread wherever. Well, that's kind of what happens within one language group. You know, if believers are faithful, the church is faithful, the gospel is going to continue to spread within that language group. Just there's not a lot of barriers other than people being faithful and people listening to the gospel. But when you look at the world, it's more like a waffle. There are barriers to the spread of that syrup, primarily language, culture, and other things as well. But when we have to be intentional, if you eat a waffle right, you know, you want to pour syrup in every one of those little boxes before you start eating that waffle. And that's how we have to be intentional. We want the gospel to not just spread where it goes more easily and naturally. We want to be intentional to see it cross those barriers and to see every people group in the world having the opportunity to hear the gospel, to respond in faith and repentance, and to see churches established in those contexts.
Yeah, just to give us some context of what we're dealing with, just in terms of people, there's an estimated 12,000 people groups, yep, ranging from, and that gets us around 8.1 billion people in the world. So 12,000 people, yep, groups. Those who are no longer unreached, meaning those who have not, or those who have heard the gospel, is about 3.4 billion people, which represents about 4,600 people groups. And then the area that we're really targeting here with Great Commission, Matthew 28, is the unreached peoples, which is about 7,300 people groups, yep, and about 4.7 billion people. So,
yeah, and I think when we use those terms, I think it is important for us to remember that, you know, when we say a group is reached, we don't mean that there's no need for further evangelism,
right,
for further church planting, for further ministry. We're really using the term similar to Paul, again, in Romans 15, where he said, I have fully preached the gospel in certain areas. He didn't mean every person has heard the gospel. He didn't mean there's not need for further ministry, for further church planting. He meant the gospel has gone there, mm-hmm, and the church is established there. And it's the job of those believers to continue that work of ministry in that area. So certainly there's need for further ministry in areas that we would classify reach. The unreached, it's really that there is not that gospel presence. Some of those unreached, there are workers who are striving to change that, who are learning those language, who are learning that language, who are involved, you know, maybe already in Bible translation and church planting, but there's very few, if any, believers or churches. Some are unengaged and unreached, where there is no one who is currently, at least to the knowledge of those who compile these statistics, there's no one who is a gospel, Bible-believing Christian who is actively engaged seeking to take the gospel there. And we can't neglect those things. But it's easy to do so. They're unreached for a reason.
Sure. And those categories really help us think through sort of what's going on globally and can really help the local church think through what it looks like to put together short-term and long-term plans to be able to hit those categories and to be actively involved in,
yep,
whether it's planting a new church in an unreached area, getting the gospel there for the first time, or it's just strengthening those existing churches that are there. Regardless, we're arguing that missions involves both categories.
Absolutely. And again, that flows out of the Great Commission. When you think of what Christ commanded, he does command us to see the gospel and churches planted where there are none. It must be a priority to say we want to see the gospel go where it hasn't. But he also commands us to baptize disciples and to teach them all that I've commanded you. And so ideally, you know, that all happens in short order sequence in missions. You know, a church is established, or the gospel is proclaimed. People come to Christ as they understand the truth of the gospel and respond in repentance and faith. They're gathered into a church. That church is equipped and leaders are trained and the scriptures are translated, and you leave a healthy, solid national church that is able to reproduce and sustain over generations in a way that's healthy. But that hasn't all that doesn't always happen. Sometimes for any number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And so you've got places where there are churches, they're just weak. And so it's right in missions that we say we need to see leadership developed. We need to see pastoral training so that those churches can be faithful to do what the Great Commission has called them to. We need to see the Bible fully translated. There's areas where there's churches, but not the entirety of the scriptures. And so they're limited in what they can teach them to observe without the entire canon of scripture. And so there's unfinished work in places that are classified as reached that it's right that we focus on. And again, that's the model of Paul and his associates in the New Testament. What do you see them doing? You see them establishing churches where there are none, and you see them strengthening churches. You know, even Paul, who had a great heart for the gospel to go where it wasn't named, spent considerable time revisiting churches that had been planted, writing churches that had been established, spending a long time with individual congregations strengthening those churches, and then sending guys like Timothy and Titus to really invest in strengthening churches. So we want to have both that Pauline, you know, reach the unreached focus, and we want to have that Timothy Titus strengthen existing churches. We want to do both when it comes to missions.
Yeah, so the New Testament is obviously a great model for exercising what we have been required to do in the Great Commission in Matthew 28. So Matthew 28 lays out the demands of Christ. Mm-hmm. Matthew 28 also lays out how the Great Commission and missions is defined, but it's also key. Matthew 28 also lays out how Christ has delegated this task to certain people. So if you could just sort of talk about what it means that obviously Christ is not here, right? He has ascended on high in Acts 1, and he handed the baton to the apostles. Well, we would argue that the apostles aren't here as well. So what does that look like for that first century New Testament church after the apostles have moved on? And then what does that look like in terms of delegation for us today?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Christ was commanding the first generation of his disciples and followers to fulfill or to play their role in the fulfillment of this commission. And it continues to be the commission that's been given to the church. And so I think when you think about the charge to go and make disciples of the nations among the peoples of the world, you really see the church having two responsibilities as it relates to that. You know, Romans 10 talks about how will they hear without a preacher, and how will they preach unless they are sent. And so just like the church at Antioch sent Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey, the church has a responsibility and the leadership of the church has a responsibility to send missionaries. And that's not just, you know, anybody who volunteers, great, we're thrilled, go. It really starts a lot earlier in the process than just sending someone, you know, putting them on a plane and sending them where they need to go. It really starts with training and equipping the saints in the local church. You know, that's the model that Christ has given to the church, is that the leadership are equipping the saints so that we can send qualified, gifted, capable people into missions. And I know we'll talk more about the practical side of that in a while or in a future episode. But the church has to embrace that role of training so that we can send. I think the church for too long has been willing to entrust that role to others, to seminaries or to missions agencies. Somebody wants to go into missions, we send them off and we trust someone else will help them to be equipped. And that's simply not true. The church has a role. Obviously, those other organizations can be very helpful in filling out that training, and there's certainly things for missionaries to learn that most local churches don't have experience in. We can't train somebody how to learn a new language necessarily, but we can train them in their understanding of scripture and theology and the character that God commands for those who would go. So the church has to train if they're going to send, And then the church tests and affirms. That's part of the process of sending, is to say, is this person someone who's biblically qualified? And again, we'll talk more about the practical side of this in a bit. And then the church has a responsibility for oversight of those missionaries. It's not, we send you, we entrust you to an agency, and everything's great, and we just maybe keep sending a check and we don't really engage. You know, there's a role and responsibility for oversight. Again, Paul's a great example of this with his first missionary journey. He was sent from that church at Antioch, a church that knew him, that he had been connected to. They traveled, and then they came back. And what did they do? They gave a report and an update to that church. That church was engaged in that way. So sending missionaries is a key part of the church's responsibility. But it's not just sending them and then they're on their own. The church also has a role in supporting missionaries. And that certainly includes financial support, prayer support, but it's a collective responsibility that we have as a church. You know, I love the example of the Philippian church when they when Paul's writing to them and he just encouraged them that you send a gift more than once for my need. They were faithful as a congregation to embrace the role of supporting Paul in the work that he was doing. But it's also the work of individuals. You know, it's not just the church collectively. You've got, you know, letters like 3 John that written to an individual believer, encouraging that support. And so, that's what Christ has given us. Not every believer, should be fulfilling the Great Commission in the sense of being faithful to make disciples in their sphere of influence. Not every believer is going to go among the peoples of the world, but we do all participate in that as we are faithful in the context of the church to support missionaries. So, it's critical that we understand our role and we embrace what Christ has delegated to us.
Yeah, it's crucial, and I think that what you said is absolutely right, and that's why we started this episode talking about Matthew 28 in the context of the local church. So what you're arguing for is that not only should local churches have a robust understanding of the scriptures for a Sunday morning corporate worship or how to use and exercise your gifts in the local church, but you also need to have a robust ministry to be able to do missions. In other words, it's not, hey, raise your hand if you would like to be involved in missions, totally, and we send you to a parachurch ministry. But it's really primarily, first and foremost, it's a mission. It is a priority of the local church. And we would say that parachurch ministries, if biblical, are helpful.
Absolutely.
And great and right. And we would love to partner with those ministries, totally, and have done so. But it's crucial to develop missions and those whom you want to send out from your local church.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a missionary who's going to go and plant a church, if they are being sent from a healthy church where they've been involved and they've seen a church doing what a church should do, they've seen healthy leadership, they've seen that church baptizing in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit as they're evangelizing others, they've seen what it looks like to teach people to observe all that I've commanded you, and they've seen the saints equipped and leadership established. Now they're ready to a degree to go and do that elsewhere. Again, it may look very different, mm-hmm, culturally. You know, the form of some of those things may look very different, but they have seen and been equipped for what a healthy church ought to be. And so often we send missionaries to do something in another part of the world that is far harder than where they're from, without the background and knowledge and experience of having been exposed to that here. And so we really set them up for failure when we send someone who doesn't have the training and, mm-hmm, the discipleship here and the experience and confirmation here to go and do a task that is very difficult. And so it's devastating on the end of what the consequences of that are when healthy churches are not committed to training and sending missionaries to plant other healthy churches. It's not something to take lightly.
Yeah, that's helpful. So that's sort of the biblical foundation. And that was just a thumbnail sketch of Matthew 28. You know, hopefully down the road, we can do another episode on just an exposition of that text and why it's crucial to understand every component. Yeah. But now let's sort of shift gears and let's just talk about the practical expressions of missions, what this looks like practically. Now that we know Matthew 28 is telling us what we need to do in the context of the local church, but let's talk about this practically and why on a practical level this starts with the leadership of the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, every church is commanded to faithfully seek to fulfill the Great Commission. It's every church that's going to look a little bit different in their practice and processes. But in every church, that starts with the leadership of the church embracing what Christ has commanded us to and determining what are the ways in which we are going to practically and actively seek to do this in our congregation. And obviously, that starts with the elders who are delegated the oversight of the local church, taking seriously this responsibility for the church and spending time thinking about, discussing how are we going to do this. You know, in some churches, and I'm thankful that this is not at all the case here at Countryside, you know, you may have a small group of people, maybe one elder or pastor who's really passionate about missions, and they're trying to keep that in front of people. But if it's not embraced by the entire leadership of the church, it's not going to maintain the priority that it deserves, because it's really not a program. It's not one silo of the church. It's to be really embedded in the fabric of all that the church does. And so the elders have a responsibility for the oversight of the church. That doesn't mean that the elders collectively can do everything that is necessary related to missions, nor should they. They should be equipping the saints, seeing the giftedness of the body, and putting people in key positions of leadership, delegating appropriate responsibility to others, while maintaining the biblical oversight that they are called to. And
yeah, that's helpful. So, yeah, I mean, you're saying that your missiology is connected to your ecclesiology. It really starts with having qualified men, the 1 Timothy 3, Titus 1 men that are qualified to lead and shepherd the church. And flowing out of that is then the responsibility to then orchestrate a biblical philosophy of mission. So all of these things, again, are intertwined and interconnected in the local church. So after you've got established elders, and again, the number of elders, of course, depends on the local church which you are at. But then after you've got that level or that layer of leadership, you know, what are some other leadership categories maybe that we have here at Countryside that would be helpful?
Yeah, so at Countryside, we have a couple of other layers of leadership that I think have been very fruitful in our desire to send and support missionaries well. And we've learned over the years and grown in our thinking about these things. So it's not like, you know, this hasn't been a process of getting to where we are today. But we really have two key groups. One is our missions leadership team. You know, this oftentimes in a church would be called a missions committee. We call it our missions leadership team. And it's a group that includes a number of elders. In our case, there's six guys who are part of our missions leadership team. Four of them currently are elders. And so there's a significant involvement of elders in our missions leadership team. But there's also a couple of others who are not elders, who are really passionate about missions, have wisdom and experience, and to some degree function more in a deacon role on the committee. They do a lot of detail work and administration and oversight. And it's a great mix of guys who are eager to be engaged. And so the missions leadership team.
Why would you say that it's helpful to have elders and lay people in the church? Why is that mix?
Yeah, I mean, helpful? I think it in some ways it goes back to both the fact that we want this embedded in the life of the congregation, and so we want the input and engagement of a variety of folks. And I think, you know, that the New Testament model, you know, even like Acts 6, where you had the apostles, obviously not a full-fledged elder deacon situation, but entrusting to faithful, qualified men to carry out the specifics of those things. And so that's part of it. You know, the elders aren't to do everything, but they are to provide oversight. And so our missions leadership team is really responsible for seeing the biblical understanding of missions fleshed out at Countryside. That includes things like, you know, overseeing our missionaries. We have significant help in that process from others that I'll talk about in a moment. But we need to be actively engaged with our missionaries, providing oversight, encouragement, support, help to them, counsel. We also are responsible for evaluating new missionaries and making recommendations to the elders on that behalf. And then with seeing missions communicated well and emphasized throughout the congregation. So that's the role of our missions leadership team. We meet about quarterly for kind of ongoing business, and then we meet often as needed for specific interactions with individual missionaries or missionary candidates, and then, you know, correspond in other ways as we need to. So that's kind of the delegated group that the elders have said, okay, you guys are going to really focus on this area. We're not going to, you know, just turn a blind eye to it. We're still engaged, but you are the guys who are going to be more engaged in the nitty-gritty. But then we have, for each of our missionaries, a care team who is really focused on that individual missionary and loving and supporting and caring for them well. You know, a lot of churches take the people who are most passionate about missions and they put them on a missions committee and they say, okay, you guys do missions. And the challenge is a lot of those people aren't necessarily gifted or desirous of providing leadership or evaluating missionaries or you know, determined. They just want to love on missionaries. And so we've tried to say, okay, we want to have those who are gifted for leadership and oversight functioning in that role. And we want to take all those people who love missions and missionaries and turn them loose to do that. And so each missionary has a care team leader, an individual or couple that missionary has oftentimes been a part of identifying someone that they have already have a good relationship with. And then the missions leadership team will approach them to serve in that way. So they're communicating regularly with that one missionary. They're praying faithfully for them. And then they build a team that it can vary in size, not a huge group, who's really invested in caring for that missionary in a way that the missions leadership team really can't have that level of interaction with every missionary. We are engaged, but that those care team leaders can then bring needs or questions or concerns to the leadership team as well. So we've had this model for probably, I don't know, 12, 15 years, and it's been just a joy to see the fruit of that in our missionaries and in just the overall missions emphasis of our church.
Yeah, Jonathan, so we've had this model that you just alluded to. We've had this model here at Countryside for well over a decade now. But you've also mentioned that, you know, there's maybe been some tweaks and changes in those early years, really trying to formulate, you know, what we think would be most helpful in terms of leadership and and mission. So just practically give us some thoughts on what that looks like to just reevaluate everything, you know, sort of just a big picture reevaluate. Sure. How often should we look at what we've got in place? And evaluate those things and look for tweaks and changes? Or is it something, hey, look, we've got this started. We started it 15 years ago, and we're just going to use this for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're always wanting to be thinking and growing. At the same time, you don't always have to be wholesale evaluating and making significant changes. Mm-hmm. Continuity and stability are helpful. And so, you know, for us at Countryside, we do a couple of elder retreats a year. One is a couple days with our wives, and one is more of a one-day extended meeting. And so a lot of these things have come out of discussions, mm-hmm. not always in contexts like that, but often in those where you can have a broader conversation about what are we doing and how is it going. And so the change from more of a traditional missions committee to a missions leadership team with care teams, that was a significant transition that required a lot of thought and consideration and communication and process. You know, since that time, the elders have had multiple conversations about our missions program overall as we are refining priorities or thinking through things. But a lot of the subtle changes and shifts have happened more at the missions leadership team level as we're getting feedback from people, or we're seeing things that we could do better, or that, oh, this care team is doing great. We want to help other care teams to do that. And so planning opportunities for care team leaders to get together, or doing training for them, or different things that has come up over the years in ways that are helpful. So I would say the elders, it's not a... They are often evaluating missionaries that are recommended by the missions leadership team, considering support levels, special projects that we can engage in missions. So our elders are thinking about and talking about missions regularly, but they're not regularly evaluating the entirety of our missions mm-hmm. program or approach. There are key times where that happens, and the missions leadership team can bring things to the elders for their discussion or approval. If there's things, you know, one example of that I might could give would be, we did a missions conference back in 2020. We do an annual conference here, and that was the theme that we chose. And flowing out of that, the missions leadership team had a desire to do kind of a mini conference every year that was just a missions emphasis Sunday, where we could pull some of what we did in that conference. And so that was not something we made that decision in isolation. We brought that to the elders, and they affirmed that desire, and then the missions leadership team could take and run with that. So things like that we have added over the years. It's been, you know, the missions leadership team often, with input from others in the congregation, taking those things to the elders. But I do think periodic evaluation, especially early on when a church is trying to think carefully about these things, and maybe coming from a time of well-intentioned excitement about missions without a lot of careful thought to well-intentioned zeal for missions with careful thought, you know, it's like that needs to be an intentional discussion among the elders and others as you are trying to move in a particular direction that you think is best.
Yeah, so that's the leadership structure that we've outlined here at Countryside mm-hmm. and that we use. So we aren't arguing that that is the only structure, but we are saying there needs to be some sort of structure to help keep your missions program, your missions ministry yep. biblically aligned, and also just progressing and moving Absolutely. Forward and making sure that people are taken care of and, yep. and shepherded well.
And I would say if it's only the elders who are trying to provide that leadership, it will not be all that the Lord intends in that church, because there are others who are gifted and capable who ought to be involved. And the elders are overseeing a lot of things. You want people who are focused on that. But some churches swing the other way, and it's, you know, the elders have just delegated this to others. And without the elder oversight, without the elders emphasizing that regularly, that church's focus on missions will not be all that it needs to be. So I think elders figuring out how does that look, the marriage of our involvement and oversight, maybe some of us more intimately involved than others, with others in the church who are gifted and capable and passionate about this, that's the conversation that I would encourage every elder board to think carefully about. And that can change over time as the Lord brings different people, different elders. That doesn't have to be fixed forever, like we said, but to think intentionally about those things and who is making the decisions to keep the train on the tracks of biblical missions.
Well, let's shift gears to talking about the priorities. Yep. The priorities of a local church. Now, you've mentioned many components to missions, and there's a lot you can do in missions, but let's talk about for a few minutes, what are the primary priorities? What are our top tier, this is the goal of missions, and let's differentiate the primary priorities from some of those other things that are important, but they mainly flow out of these primary aspects.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to some degree we've already alluded to these and defined them as we just talked about what is commanded in the Great Commission, what is modeled in the New Testament in the Book of Acts and beyond. And I think at Countryside we have we've defined those priorities really in two ways. You know, the first is planting churches among the least reached. So, and that's, you know, where is there not currently a gospel presence and churches that we want to see churches established in that? We have to keep that at the forefront of our focus. Is we want to see churches established where there are none. You know, we've defined it as among the least reached. We haven't defined it exclusively as among the unreached, in the sense that there are peoples that are large, and so the fact that they are not technically unreached doesn't mean that there's not a real clear right focus for continuing church planting efforts among them. But obviously a big part of this is those unreached groups, those languages where there is no gospel witness, no scriptures, that we want to see those things prioritized. And so that we have to keep as a priority. And then the second component for us is strengthening existing churches. And we see that primarily in the New Testament through leadership development. How do you strengthen churches? Well, you equip leadership for those churches so that they can continue to equip the saints within those churches. And so that's, again, what we see. You know, the New Testament model, Paul sent Titus, you know, to appoint elders in every city as I directed you. So his job was to see qualified, equipped leadership in those churches. And so those are really the two, you know, to use the kind of the track idea, you know, those are the two tracks that we want to be about. Not every missionary is doing both of those to the same degree. You know, but we want to be evaluating those priorities. Now, again, there's things that are on the back end of that. Mm-hmm. If you want to see a church planted in an unreached area that is largely unreached because of the geographic limitations of getting there, maybe you can only get there by helicopter or by hiking for a week. Well, there's support that goes into that, whether that's helicopter pilots or other things that are necessary for that. And so those are important things that need to be in place for that ultimate goal to happen. And so we also support missionaries who are not necessarily doing those things exactly, but we do want to be intentional about what is it that they're ultimately getting at. And unfortunately, you know, in missions today, there's a lot of good things that can happen in the world as Christians go out, but we have to keep the priority of planting and strengthening churches, or else we will just, you know, neglect that ultimate goal. We'll be evangelistic. A lot of what's done in missions today has the goal of building relationships for the sake of the gospel. through meeting physical needs of people. And those are things that believers ought to do. But if there's not a clear goal of and a clear intent of seeing a church planted and seeing leadership equipped so that church can be healthy and grow, we're not ultimately accomplishing the Great Commission.